Today's episode of the Rewind Design Podcast is being brought to you by the Think Boyd Real Estate Team. The team of Nicole and Jeff believe that buying or selling real estate is more than just a transaction. It's a connection that should feel like working with family. For their local perspective and sage advice, if you're thinking of buying or selling, Think Boyd, part of Royal LePage Team Advantage Realty Brokerage Inc., Think Boyd Real Estate Team. Hello and welcome to Rewind Design, a cottage country podcast. You have landed in season 2 of the podcast, which is very exciting because I have an amazing episode today. But if you're interested, season 1 was also a wonderful listen, I do have to say. Season 1 focused on interviewing Georgian Bay and Muskoka cottagers, specifically about their cottage properties. So we talked a lot about how their cottage property has changed over time, how they ended up purchasing their cottage, how long they've had it for, how their cottage design has morphed and changed and weaved through time. Some of these stories, I'll have you know, are pretty wild. There's some things going on in Georgian Bay that you might be shocked about. I don't want to give anything away because I'd love for you to go back and listen to some episodes, but I've been shocked in my interview processes. I'll leave it there. So I'd go back and listen to season 1 if you're interested in the history of the area and listening to really beautiful stories of how much cottagers love Georgian Bay and Muskoka. So if this is your first episode you're listening to in season 2, welcome. Thank you so much for listening. Season 2 is a really special season for me, because it all started when I was working on season 1 and I was noticing while I was boating all around cottage country interviewing cottagers, I was really noticing the impact that cottaging and modern cottaging perhaps is having on our environment. Our beautiful ecological environment here is so special, especially the shorelines of Georgian Bay. And I started to wonder if there was maybe some building practices that we were using in our modern world that maybe we could challenge and talk about and see if there's better ways to build in terms of environmental sustainability. But as the season progressed, we started talking more and more about sustainability with so many guests on the show. And it's become quite an interesting, debatable topic because sustainability can mean so many different things to so many different people. And there's so many different kinds of sustainability. So we're talking environmental sustainability, but also energy sustainability and economic sustainability and social sustainability. And all of these things are so important when we're talking about the overarching idea of sustainability. So season 2 is focusing on these topics. I'm trying to speak to as many people in the building industry as possible. So that includes architects, other interior designers, landscapers, engineers, all of the above. So it's been a super exciting experience and I've got lots of episodes piled up to share in the next few months. So please follow along and stay tuned. So today on the show, we have Kelly Buffy and Robert Kostelic from the Toronto firm AKB Architects. The studio has been building award-winning cottages in the Muskoka region for close to 20 years. Their designs bring together the qualities we absolutely love most about cottages, including expansive decks and stone fireplaces, but with really clean, minimalist looks and all natural materials. We talk to Kelly and Robert about their process and how they design cottage property. We talk about their interest in bringing a new kind of contemporary expression to cottage living. We talk about being light on the land when building and designing in pristine landscapes such as Georgian Bay and Muskoka. We talk about what they call the unseen elements of minimalist design and how simplicity in architecture is, in reality, very complicated to realize. So in today's episode, we're actually going to be speaking about one really cool project that Kelly and Robert just completed. They just got photographed, and it's called Whistling Wind, and it's located in Point of Barrel, and it's actually located on a remote island facing the open water on Georgian Bay, and it's called Whistling Wind due to its really open exposure and wild weather patterns and how you can hear this ethereal whistling throughout the property. because of that super strong west wind. So the cottage is designed to be extremely light on the land with passive systems seamlessly embedded into the design. This is one of those cottages that is not only beautiful in its form, it also employs nature as part of its energy system, using the sun, wind, and fire for heating and cooling. But we'll get a lot deeper into that during this episode. I also wanted to mention that Whistling Wind Island has actually recently been nominated for two prestigious architecture and design awards, the Grey Design Awards in Seattle for Best Residential Architecture, and also by the Ontario Architecture Association for Design Excellence. The project will also be featured in the June issue of Wallpaper Magazine in the UK. Before we go deeper into this specific project, which we will talk about later in the episode, I wanted to start off with Kelly and Robert's background and how they became cottage architects. So just in terms of both of your roles at the company, so you have Kelly, you're the creative director. Robert, you're the technical director.
As a creative director, I'm, I guess, really leading the design, architectural, and interior. I'm involved in all client meetings, design-related meetings, and I meet with the team, and I'm really heavily involved still in every design decision that we're making. And that's my passion. And that's really why I felt driven to sort of start our own thing. So yeah, I guess for me, I'm more about the kind of overall bigger picture. What's the direction of the firm? I'm working with our marketing team now, which is quite new for me to be involved.
And exciting.
It is exciting. We have a lot coming up in the next year. So we're turning 20 in May of 2024. So we have a lot to release and share.
My role as technical director, I've always had a keen interest in how things got put together and problem solving, essentially, ever since, I guess, I was a kid taking like radios apart and thermometers and working with tools that my dad would have me straighten bent finishing nails. So I got pretty adept at working with tools and building things. And that turned over into my interest in theater set design in high school, which ended up becoming part of my portfolio. So I really got engaged in creating an environment of a set design and then painting it and then getting all the materials together to do it. And it just felt very fulfilling to create these things that are a temporary environment, but it's still talked about, ideas of space, light, engagement with people in the space of the set, essentially. And yet a sort of overwhelming sort of control of that, which the instructor obviously let us do it all and do these theater productions 3 a year. And I sort of snuck into theater. I had no prerequisites, but I convinced teacher the year prior, since I helped and all my additional time to build sets and my friends' earlier plays. And then the next year, they just let me into grade 13 theater because of my commitment. It carries through today. And then I think any success has to do with that kind of dedication, work ethic, and rigor. And good things came out of that. So I ended up having a portfolio that was interesting to show. And that carried through into my work, where I ended up doing a lot of detailing early on in my career, in my co-op career, getting exposed at offices. It seemed like there was always a vacuum of people that were excited about actually detailing parts of a building and a structure. And for me, I thought, this is great. It's sort of like creating your own world and figuring out how to deal with a technical issue and how you can make it artful. Mm-hmm. And so that was, ended up serving our role, trying to make architecture that looked like it could be in California, but it's built in Canada with our extreme weather fluctuations. So,
and I think too, we were so busy when we first joined forces that you fall into your strengths. So it's not something that we consciously decided, but we were so overwhelmed with the work that you just end up doing what you do best. And then what we do best complements each other. So it worked out really well.
Yeah. I could sort of say, no way, that's not going to work. And then you say, yes way. And then I'll say, okay way. And then you say, maybe way. And then then we come up with these, hybrid solutions that you wouldn't maybe have thought of initially independently, but
It's really about pushing each other and knowing the limits of how far to push. I can be quite, strong-handed sometimes on the design side, but I do know, and Rob is really brilliant. He's exceptional at figuring out how to make the detail look elegant. And that's what, you know, makes the project sing. It's not just about the big idea. It's really about resolving all of these technical kind of elements in the most sophisticated and beautiful way. So his eye is really on those.
Removing downspouts.
Yes, removing all
all downspouts have to be invisible.
And love that.
Yeah. any kind of venting. Yeah, we're really, it's the art of the unseen. What we really focus on, trying to make things look as simple and easy as possible and feel really tranquil as a result of that, all the alignments. You know, just thinking about space in a holistic way, the inside and the outside, how do they relate to each other? What's your experience as you approach the building? And then throughout your experience inside the building, and then when you depart from the building, it should have a very kind of unified, holistic impression on you. And that's what we together try to do. But we do have a fantastic team. We have project leads, and they are the ones that are the primary contact for the clients on a day-to-day basis. And we're more behind the scenes now. I'm still tend to be client facing because I'm involved in the design meetings and the initial kind of design ideas and concepts, but we do, yeah, we have a fantastic team, and we're really selective in how we hire and who we hire. We're 12 right now, not too small, not too big. It's sort of manageable size. We find I think we're interested in potentially growing somewhat, but we never have aspired to be a large office. I think we're both too passionate about the work to be too far removed from it.
So Kelly, you worked for the interior design studio Yabu Puschelberg, and Rob, you were at the architecture firm KPMB. So how did you decide to go out on your own and start your own studio specialized in residential?
We sort of rolled the interior design firm into our new sort of joint venture. And they were residential clients, but I think it's interesting because I don't think that I ever consciously chose to do residential initially, but once we were in that world, it was so rewarding to be able to connect with our clients on such an intimate level and really understand their needs and be producing something for someone we know and we like. We really develop relationships with our clients. I think it's about helping people to feel that we are enhancing the quality of their lives. And that feels good to know that we're, mm-hmm. It's not just about design. Like there is meaning behind it, and it's nice to see to fruition.
For me, to be honest, it was a bit of a shock. It was a big plumbing fixture order, and seeing how much plumbing went into a house and how much it cost, and I was just astounded. And that was our first introduction.
Yeah.
My first introduction to residential, really, and how every component, no matter how minuscule, is considered and vetted by not just one client, but usually it's a couple, and you have two people vetting out things, and it just so much attention and care taken. And I can honestly say that I was more impatient than Kelly. And I learned to, you know, Kelly has the patience of a saint, which I had to learn doing this kind of work. But and then I sort of fell into the groove of that. And now I live for it because it's you're helping people live in a space that they're going to love and enjoy and share for the rest of their lives. So it's a lot more meaningful in that sense for me. And Kelly, which I believe share that sentiment as well. It's a testament also, I guess, to our commitment and attention when we have those friend clients return for their next adventure project. And we're always very appreciative and
we do
humble.
Yes. We're so grateful for those repeat clients and the referrals that they've given us. Most of our work has been referral based. I've done quite a bit across Ontario, Muskoka, Point of Barrel, Halliburton, whereas we've done Prince Edward County, Thornbury, Collingwood, very diverse. And we're doing an interior right now in Telluride, Colorado. We've done an interior in Paris, France. So we're open. We work far afield, Cambridge, Caledon, anywhere.
How do you design differently for cottages versus designing for someone's principal residence?
Both of us had cottages growing up, very, modest cottages. But I do remember as a child it was such a joyful place to be, and that feeling of freedom. I distinctly remember building a fort on a beautiful bedrock of granite, and just the using towels and sticks and that type of thing. But I remember how freeing it felt to be there. It was, I think your parents relax as well when you're a child at the cottage, and I think you internalize that. So it was a really beautiful memory. And then Rob, you had a...
Yeah, we had a family cottage. So my parents bought a tract of land in Penetanguishene, a mosquito-infested forest lot, and we would drive up there with a canvas moldy tent and stay in that thing and just have fun in the forest, picking berries and running to the dump with local neighbors that residents lived there. And I had a parallel life with my friends up in cottage country, doing the crazy forest running, battles and forts, and finding old rusty cars. And I remember recalling a blue Mustang shell that we would just pretend we were racing in. And then finally, I guess there's enough resources that my parents got together to actually build a one-story simple cottage with a friend who was a framer. And I remember my job was to actually shingle pretty much half the roof at the age of, I think it was around 12. And I was pretty good with a hammer. So I still remember those galvanized shingle nails, roofing nails, and hammering that in. I didn't carry the shingles. They were really heavy, but they would bring it up and I would just do the repetitive shingling. And that just seemed natural to live in the city. And we lived right downtown in Dufferin, and between Bloor and Dupont. So it was on the main streets. So it was very urban. But being in the cottages, like as Kelly mentioned, just there's a freedom to investigate, run, enjoy, meet different people, and then build something from scratch. So I remember drilling for a well. My dad using a divining rod trying to find water. So I believe that he was able to find it with two coat hangers. and that found it, the site. We found the well, and then we built the cottage. And so that's always been there. And when I look back, it's like it's the form and shape of it is actually similar to sort of one of our projects when you look at it.
It's very, simple, single volume with gabled roof. And that's so typical of the cottage vernacular. But then there are so many different takes on it and ways to explore that same shape.
We embraced the gable.
Yes, we have. It's it's when we started in 2004 as a contemporary architect, there were not many contemporary gabled roofs, and our first project was a ski chalet, and we were asked to make sure that was gabled for the snow runoff, and that was challenging because we needed to embrace a new language of what is a gabled roof in contemporary architecture. Now it's rampant and you see it everywhere, but at the time it was something I think we were, one of the earlier firms in Canada exploring at the time, based on a trip that we had taken to Europe and the Graubünden region and the Swiss Alps, and really appreciating the architecture that we saw there. So we realized the roof is another volume. Like you can look at it and interpret it in so many different ways.
Cottages are obviously, like you've said, a very different experience than being in an urban center. You're feeling really free, you're feeling refreshed, you're feeling totally like one-to-one with nature. And I find when you're designing cottages,
it's just such a different experience than when you're either in the city or another primary residence. Mm-hmm. So when you're designing a cottage, do you have a different design process than when you're designing something in the city?
Yes. Yes, it's more, I mean, really the connection to the land is so important in cottage country. It is anywhere we do work, but in cottage country, there's so much more opportunity, really. The land is, the properties are much larger. The land has so much variation in topography and the shoreline, whether it's rock or sand or cliff edges. There's just so much that we have to work with, and it really inspires that much more creativity in, you know, how can we tread lightly on the land and fully integrate our building in a way that is really discreet, and yet it also capitalizes on all the amazing beauty that we're surrounded by. So all the views, materiality, low maintenance is usually a big request of our clients in cottage country. They want it to be easy. There's less formality, significantly less. It's really about being connected to nature and the land. Like, how can you live close to the land and use the essentials? I mean, some projects have more sort of, I guess, extravagance than others. And it really depends on the mindset of the client and what they're looking for. Some are looking for almost a resort of their own, and then others are really compelled to just be at one with nature. And they are usually the ones looking for three season, very modest, small footprints. But he has a different perspective. And it's really about us. I mean, our job is to understand what is the client's passion or intent or desires, and what makes them feel good, and what are they looking to get out of this project. And then we filter that through our lens and sort of give it back to them in a way that we, you know, hope that they really appreciate and like, and they feel comfortable in. So, but that's our job. It's not to enforce the way that they're going to live.
So I just wanted to get your opinion on what sustainable architecture means to the two of you and your firm.
From a high level perspective, I think it's about making very conscious and thoughtful decisions about the marks we make and leave behind on the earth. And, you know, we design our buildings for multi-generational families. So we are thinking 100 years minimum and longer. So how do we do that in a way? You know, construction is such a aggressive sort of, it has a huge impact on the environment. So minimizing the number of times a building is built or rebuilt, creating that longevity is key. Yeah, thinking about the quality of the construction, the quality of the structure itself, the materials that clad the building, the layout, and really designing long-term, something that is both reflective of our current culture, but also thinking about the future. How can this building be adaptively reused in the future? Are we giving it good bones? And if we are, then, you know, we expect that it will evolve and change over time. But as long as we have those kind of essentials in place, then then we're, I think, doing our job to steward the earth. I mean, that's in addition to all of the technical. There's also geothermal and solar panels and, you know, rainwater, ventilation, passive ventilation. It's, you know, thinking about direction of sun, roof overhangs, solar heat gain.
Are clients coming to you wanting sustainability, or is it just something that your firm practices?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's become, you know, for us to be responsible architects, it's what we have to do. So we believe strongly that this is important for the planet, and it's something that we want to integrate into every project we do. It does require education and conversations with the client to explain the difference between triple glazed versus double glazed windows, different types of insulation, our values, why we're promoting particular product, if maybe it's more expensive in the upfront costs, but the long-term costs are. So that's an important conversation for us to have. And our clients want to hear that because it's really a value proposition. It's not just about, you know, total cost. It is like, we're really lucky. I have to say we have fantastic clients and so many of them are invested in doing what is good for the earth.
Mm-hmm.
So although we don't promote ourselves as a sustainable or a sustainability firm, some other firms do, for us, it's just second nature.
So your latest project is Whistling Wind, which we talked about in the intro. And as we mentioned earlier, it's an island cottage that is only accessible during the summer months. So it's not completely off-grid, but the design features take advantage of nature itself to heat and cool the interior spaces. Can we talk a little bit more about this project?
So this is a project in Punta Barrel. It's about a 15-minute boat ride, I think, from Desmandes, Marina. Mm-hmm. And it's a one-acre island in the archipelago. So there's many islands around it. There are many shoals below the water. It's a really just beautiful, serene environment. And there are so many trees that if you think of Tom Thompson, the Group of Seven, the paintings with the windswept pines. It really is that magical. Point of Barrel is just a really, really special place on Earth. It's very exposed. It's a one-acre island. There's hardly any vegetation on it. It's mostly bedrock. And it's a series of little islands around it as well. So there's actually a connection between the part of the island in which the main cottage is on and the Bunky. There's a bridge connection over a small sort of waterway that goes below. So it's very unique in that there aren't many trees on this island. So we had to really think about how we were going to orient the buildings and the wind. The client is a kite surfer. So he, you know, and the wind up there in Point of Barrel, it is the true Canadian North in mm-hmm. my mind. You know, the wind is mercurial. The weather is unpredictable. Like, we have solar here. We were as close to off-grid as we could be on this island. We really reused the existing resources. The cottage is about 1,500 square feet. It was rebuilt on the original footprint. The Bunky, I think, is around 1,000 square feet, or smaller, actually, just under that. And we built that on the original footprint. The boat storage as well, very modest. And it is boat storage opposed to boat house. So it's on the land, and we took half of it to provide a small fitness room for the client, with a large window looking out to the, you know, gorgeous rocks and islands beyond. And there's also a sauna pavilion there with a large window on it looking out, and an outdoor shower will be integrated as well. So it's a very unique experience. It's about really being light in the way we integrate with the land. There's no blasting, of course. It's really pinning to the rock, trying to keep our footprints small. We're looking at the, you know, the depth of the windows there. We've reset them back as a way to modify some of the solar heat gain. They're triple glazed windows. We also have aluminum shutters or roller shutters that come down in the winter. It's a very short cottage life. It's really, you know, April, May to October-ish. Yeah, we do have insulation, and that's, again, for the sustainability aspects, but it's not a mechanically heated or cooled cottage or bunkie. We have the fireplaces, which provide heat in the cooler, you know, the smell of the fire, too.
Yeah. Had you, before this project, had you ever done an island project?
We had done one in Muskoka. That's on our website. It's known as Sagamore North. Barging all of the materials over is a really challenging kind of effort on the builder's part. And as you mentioned, the weather up there is so unpredictable that it can really affect the, you know, the timing of, mm-hmm. of the delivery of materials. Also, you know, even the labor, you know, if the storm's rolling in, definitely less working days.
Yeah.
And it's not, at least in the areas we've worked in Point of Barrow, the lake doesn't freeze over. I believe that started 2019.
Okay.
And through COVID, it was a very slow process. It did complete though, I believe in 2022.
Okay.
We've just photographed it. It's a very modest project with a lot of kind of architectural heart, I would say, put into it. And I don't think I've mentioned the concept, but it was really about this being a kite surfer's island, wanting, and what is the idea of the wind? The wind up there whips around. It's not a singular direction. It really does change. So we were looking at the roof lines as if they were all windswept, similar mm-hmm. to the trees, and all, each of them are windswept in a different direction. So there's this asymmetry, very volumetric kind of massing to the mm-hmm. to the buildings that are clad in cedar shakes, both on the walls and the roof, and that allows for this kind of idea of the building as an object, as a whole, a stereotomic volume that we've then carved these windows and these voids out of. It's quite a unique environment to think about and to really think, how do we respond to this context, which mm-hmm. is so rugged and almost violent at times. I really have to think about durability up there. Cedar being a local material, we did want something that would be of the context mm-hmm. and, you know, relevant to the region. And it's the texture of the cedar shake is also, it creates some, it speaks to the ruggedness of the nature.
It has a rough texture and
yeah.
it's weathered to almost mimic the granite.
Graying of it, the buildings become these subtle forms that, you know, almost blend into the rock.
They stand out.
As you enter in the front door, there's a modest sort of entry foyer with a small bench, hooks on the walls. Beyond that, there's a small sort of laundry area. And then the open concept space is the kitchen, living, and dining room. And they open up on all sides, so we're getting cross breeze through the entire volume. The on that sort of parallel side to the public space, meaning the kitchen, living, dining room,
mm-hmm.
are two bedrooms with a shared bathroom in between. So one of the bedrooms is the primary bedroom, and the other bedroom is their daughter's bedroom, which has two twin beds. And the washroom is a pass-through, so you can enter from either bedroom. Very, very simple
yeah.
programming, and just really about the essentials. Slide clad, it's cedar on the interior, the tongue and groove, and we do have an 1/8-inch reveal between the boards.
The materials move, obviously, in this kind of climate, so
yeah.
you want those, the jointing really helps.
Yes.
Things settle and move and expand.
Yes. The floor is a wide plank. It's from Moffy. It's a beautiful floor. It's fur, and it has a whitewash on it. Really very much in keeping with the walls and the ceiling, we mm-hmm. whitewash them to match. So similar to the exterior, thinking about cladding everything in the same tone and the same material, or not the exact same wood species, but the same type of materiality. So it really feels like you're carving away like the inside of an apple. It's a consistently one tone. And I should say, we collaborated with Anne Hefner. She did the furniture selection and also some of the millwork in the beds. The kitchen is something we had done, and it is a oak, actually, wood veneer with a whitewash on it. And that, again, was to match the tone of the walls. So everything really has this kind of very kind of quiet, soft, tranquil.
Without a backsplash, because the backsplash is a window.
Yeah. It faces, yes, we do see the water from there. It actually faces the main dock, the entry, so you can see people
Who's coming. Oh, okay. I love that.
Yeah. It's a sort of, I believe that direction was north, so it's less of about heat gain in there. We Well, we use the electrical. We reuse the septic in its existing location. We did upgrade it. We have minimized the amount of lighting throughout. So we did want to really be sensitive to the night sky as well. And for the experience of the cottage at night, it's much nicer to have the dim light. Really, the moonlight there is phenomenal. It is just so broad. And when we were up there to photograph, actually, it was a full moon. And the amount of light that came in during the evening was incredible. So we're really trying to dematerialize that inside-outside barrier without having all glass.
Yeah.
We are using punch windows there. So it's a really nice way to utilize the natural sunlight and the moonlight and minimize whatever we can in terms of electricity. We also had deep set windows. That was really important for us because we didn't have the roof overhang. Mm-hmm. So we needed to create some relief. And I think it was also very much adaptive reuse sort of in our mentality. We tried to reuse as much as we could, but what happened was the quality of the materiality was so, I guess really at the end of its life, mm-hmm. the early 1900s.
Okay.
The bunkie for sure. And then I think the cottage may have been after that. And the bunkie had this really beautiful, authentic fireplace there that we stone. So wanted. It was stone, big, heavy boulders of stone. We so wanted to retain it. And as it turned out, it wasn't structurally stable and we had to take it down, had to think forward and what could we do to make it the longevity really last as much as we needed to. So it is a granite stone now, Muskoka granite, mm-hmm. also of the region.
Yeah.
And really blends into the rock. So two materials really on mm-hmm. the inside.
Sustainability aside, we talked a lot about that, but are there any exciting and unique design choices you made for Whispering Wind or maybe, oh, sorry, what did I say?
Whispering.
Oh, is it whistling?
It is whistling.
I wrote whispering by accent. Whistling Wind.
Yeah, it actually whistles when you're there.
It's incredible. When we went outside during the photo shoot, we heard it and it was literally whistling all around us. It had nothing to do with the building, or we had called it Whistling Wind. So we knew the client had mentioned that the wind whistles, but we had never experienced the whistling until we were there on the...
I guess for us, it was having that monolithic materiality of the form, how you create the envelope that seems seamless, but has those transitions with flashing, which we used copper flashing here, which is a noble material that will obviously last for a long period of time and which made these natural material transitions look a lot more subtle. So when you get close up, you can see those kind of breaks, but from afar, it looks very homogeneous and just natural with a nice texture, even though there's that, crisp lines of the flashing and,
Yeah, these necessary elements that really allow the building to weather properly over time. That's where
we're cedar really has to breathe as well. So we have a special breather mat that we used all behind the cedar because it acts differently from other softwoods. So there's even specific types of weather barrier that work with cedar. You can't use a conventional Tyvek system. Mm-hmm. And so we have to be cognizant of that. So, I think this is just keeping those details to a minimum, having the cedar breathe really well to add longevity. And
I think it's, again, it's the unseen elements. I think things that look simple are usually more complicated. We are liable to as architects. So as much as we like to experiment, we have to make sure that we can stand behind it. And, mm-hmm. we won't suggest something to our clients that we feel will fail. We have to, in being creative, it's not only in the design elements and the concept driving the design, but it really is the resolution of the details that allows.
That's, the perfect compatibility for the firm, for the two of you, is you both bring different aspects kind of perfectly merging together to have that overall concept, Kelly, and Robert to have that technical ability. So maybe, like you said, you didn't know that kind of coming together, and you really brought the strengths out of each other. So you can see that's over the last 20 years evolved and obviously worked very well together to achieve these beautiful projects, which I'm just, so excited to see more.
We have one project finishing up in Caledon. It was a large project on a large property. So it's a wonderful building, though, with a fantastic client and a great program. And it will be widely published, probably coming out in the summer.
I'll see it, I'm sure.
Well, a lot of sustainable measures.
Yeah, okay.
Green roof.
Oh, geothermal there as well. And
solar
panels. We were thinking about longevity in terms of reality, as we always do. And the other, there's a lot of interesting things we have on the go. There's a peninsula property as well in Muskoka we're working on, which will have a fairly large cottage, a modest boathouse, a nice size bunkie on it. We're also working on a cottage on Kawagama Lake. We're working on one in Miskwabi Lake. We've got some in Rosedale. We're doing some heritage homes.
Yes, love that.
Which we hadn't spoken about.
So many exciting things coming up. Yes, we'll have to stay tuned to see all of that. And then where can people find you if they're looking for you?
We're www.akb.ca, and our Instagram is akbarchitects. And I should mention that we've also purchased a building, so we will be moving into our new building. So that's really exciting for us. We've renovated it in a way that is reflective of, our sort of tendencies towards design. It is done on a modest sort of budget for ourselves, but it's something that will be inspiring.
Just want to say thank you so much for participating, and I really look forward to seeing all of your work that's coming out in the next few years. So thank you so much, Kelly and Robert.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your interest.
Today's episode was brought to you by the Think Boyd Real Estate Team. The team of Nicole and Jeff believe that buying or selling real estate is more than just a transaction. It's a connection that should feel like working with family. For their local perspective and sage advice, if you're thinking of buying or selling, think Boyd. Part of Royal LePage Team Advantage Realty Brokerage Inc., Think Boyd Real Estate Team. Thank you so, so much for listening to this week's episode. I so appreciate every single listener that tunes in, every single reader that reads the blog, rewinddesign.ca. The best thing you can do for me to support me in this journey is to either follow along on Spotify, Apple Music, or whichever platform you listen to, click that follow button. The second best thing you can do is share this podcast to your friends and family. If anyone you know might be interested, just forward this along to them and tell them to take a listen or take a peek at my website. And if you're interested in supporting me further, I also have a Patreon account where you can donate $5 a month to the podcast, and a portion of that will also go to the Georgian Bay Land Trust, and that is patreon.com/rewinddesign. No pressure to do any of that. I am just so happy if you're listening to this and if you love cottage country and Georgian Bay and Muskoka as much as I do. So thank you again so much, and stay tuned for another episode.